My name's Jamie, and I'm an alcoholic. You know, what's funny is I got sober in this room almost 11 years ago, and it was just a little different. The podium was over here, and I remember coming from Cross Park, and I was in detox for it's probably the 12th time I was in detox, and over a long span of time. And I remember they coming down the road, and we turned on Wright Road, and I was like, this doesn't seem very right to me, you know? And honestly, it was, I'm sure I'm going to tell part of my story is very much similar to your guys' story in the sense that I didn't really want to be sober. I just really I had nowhere else to go, and I didn't want to die. And coming here, I mean, that wasn't, you know, they used to say, your best thinking got you here. And I was like, yeah, because I'm here, right? You know what I mean? Like, I really thought that that was a good option to me. And realizing that I had blown everything up and lost everything. And I literally came in here with a backpack and, you know, no friends, no family. Nobody wanted to talk to me anymore. I lost the will to hustle, basically. I couldn't go out and get that money anymore to get high or to drink. And it's just, you know, it's an amazing life to fast forward almost 11 years to come in here again and to be asked by Chris to come tell my story. You know, my story is very, I mean, I'm sure it's very much like everybody else. I mean, I was born in Ohio. I was adopted to a couple of teachers. My father was a professor at SUNY Binghamton in upstate New York. My mother was a teacher as well, but she was alcoholic. And she was alcoholic like I was. So that means that she was probably alcoholic like you were. You know what I mean? She taught me all the great stuff about being an alcoholic, about how to be emotionally unavailable, how not to be to need love, to be able to drown our sorrows, to where anything that was bad we just drink more, to physical violence, you know. And I still loved her to the day she died. And I'll fast forward to where that comes, because it's pretty amazing what happens after we get sober and some of the things that we get to do in sobriety when it comes to amends and when it comes to turning the persons that we were to become different people. And, you know, we all in here, I know, have a vision of who we can be, right? And, you know, sometimes we don't live up to that. You know, we fall short all the time. I still fall short in some things, but the thing is, I don't have to drink over that today. I don't have to get high over that. I don't have to blow up a marriage. I don't have to, you know, I don't have to do, you know, I don't have to quit my job or go stomping off into the corner and throw a fit. You know what I mean? That's a different me. But so I grew up on, grew up in Binghamton. And so there wasn't very much, my parents got divorced at 7, and there wasn't very much parental guidance. And so I started running the streets at an early age, 7, 8 years old, 9 years old, and I'd stay out all night. And, you know, I have kids that are my age then. And I look at my kids sometimes and I'm like, I can't believe that I was running the streets at their age. You know what I mean? Like, that's just bizarre to me. And, you know, I joke a lot because I have friends that have kids that are, I got sent away when I was 12 to an institution. And I have friends that have 12-year-olds that are all like bubbly and laughing and happy and all this. And I'm like, man, I was miserable at 12. You know what I mean? Like, how does that happen? You know, but so I fell into, you know, running around with a bunch of older kids and committing crimes and, you know, doing whatever, you know, just being a hyperactive young punk rock kid living on any way that I could. And most of it had to do with just waking up in the morning and blotting out my intolerable existence. You know, I thought I was having fun. Honestly, I really did. I thought I was having a blast. But, you know, years later, I realized I was just trying to cover up all the pain and the suffering and the hurt and the love that I wish somebody would give me, you know. And that, you know, that unfortunately is not, that's not something that I, you know, was excited to find out that my problem was that I was really had this big, huge spiritual malady, and that, you know, I was never loved enough, and, you know, the people didn't care about me enough. They didn't give me enough attention. You know what I mean? Like, those things weren't like exciting for me to find out. That wasn't like a revelation to me, you know? I just, you know, I think about this, like being an alcoholic, being a drug addict, I understand now what that means, right? I understand that I have a God-sized hole in my soul, and there's nothing that can fill it. Nothing, absolutely nothing. Sex, drugs, rock and roll, nothing is going to fill that. And it's a relief now, but when we're in the thick of it all, when I'm in the thick of it all, I don't see it like that. You know, like, I was just going to fill it with whatever, and it just whatever tried to make me feel different than who I was at that point. And, you know, some people didn't realize that they were alcoholic until much later on in life and have higher bottoms. See, I'm an absolute alcoholic through and through. I knew I was alcoholic long before anybody was able to call me an alcoholic. I mean, I would absolutely trade anything and everything when it came to drugs and alcohol. I was strung out for 20 years. And I would do anything and everything as a direct result of that. And, you know, I've crossed a lot of lines that I'm sure that most of us have in this, you know, being an active addiction. You know, I'll never do that. Well, I've done it. You know what I mean? And that's the one – this is the other thing about recovery is, man, I've done some real dark, dirty shit in my lifetime, and I've owned up to all of it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've come to terms with the stuff that I did is in active addiction. And this is the coolest thing about recovery is that I'm able to take what dirty crap shit that I did before and actually help somebody else. Because, you know, us alcoholics, we're all here. It's just whether we're going to own up to it, or whether we're going to be honest about ourselves, whether we're going to be going, you know what, I've done it too. You know what I mean? What can I do to help? How can I help? You know what I mean? This is the one place that we get to come that we're actually, all the shit that we've done out there is, can actually help somebody else. You know what I mean? The normies don't understand that. And the thing is, I know that you guys understand that, you know, when we talk to people outside of the, outside of these rooms, is we laugh about a lot of the dark stuff that we've done. But if you like share that with somebody else outside of these rooms, they're like, what's wrong with you? You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, I've learned a little bit of tact when it comes to that. I don't have to share my whole story with somebody that I don't know, you know, hanging out. But so I got sent away when I was 12 to a group home, and they called it Persons in Need of Supervision. That's what they called it back then, right? And PINS, it was a PINS petition, you know? And I was like, and I fell in with gangsters right away. Like, as soon as you get sent away to those places, I start learning how to really, really commit crime and how to really be, how to be outside of the law, right? How to get away with a lot of illegal stuff. I mean, I remember going on a furlough to my buddy Cisco's house at 13, and his brother sold cocaine in Nyack, New York. And I remember bagging up cocaine at that age. And I think, again, I think about that, like our friends that have 13-year-olds. Like, could you imagine? You know what I mean? Like, I know that some of you guys have done this. You know what I mean? So it's not like I'm unique. I'm not. But it's, you know, I'm unique in the sense that I'm alcoholic. You know what I mean? Like, that's what we do. That's like the lightning rod. I'll go there. I much rather go to there than have the natural, you know, like I'm going to read books. I'm going to pass the test. You know, I remember at 16, I was like, I'm going to get a GED. And, you know, my parents are teachers, right? Mind you, right? So they were not too happy that I was just going to get a GED and not go to college. I was just going to get a GED, period. Like, okay, they say I have to get a high school diploma. I don't really want to, but I passed it by 2 points, 2 points. And like, you know, That was like an achievement for me, because I got in more trouble as a teenager than most people. I got, like I said, I was sent away from the time I was 12 to the time I was 18. And every time I'd go home, I would go home for a month, and then my mother, who would drink, would say, call up my it was whatever, probation officer, but I don't know if it was that. It was something, some like caregiver of some sort. And she'd call him up and say, oh, I can't handle him anymore. He's out of control. And then they send the cops. And I'd usually run for, you know, weeks at a time until the cops finally found me somewhere. And then they'd take me back to a group home and they'd put me, you know, I was institutionalized. And, you know, I don't think I really came to terms with it. I didn't have an easy childhood. You know what I mean? Like, I don't feel like most kids nowadays don't experience that, right? And I feel like, and I'm just going to put it out there, but, you know, it makes me uncomfortable, but it's probably, you know, I don't want to make other people uncomfortable, but, you know, I was molested as a kid, and one of the things that I'm really clear about is that I no longer blame my life today because I was molested, because I wasn't loved, because my mother didn't care about me, because my mom beat me, or because I got in lots of fights and got taken advantage of, or, you know, that I did devious stuff on drugs. I don't blame any of that stuff for the person who I am today. Actually, you know, all that stuff actually makes me the person that I am standing in front of you. And, you know, but for a long time, I felt like that was my reason. You know what I mean? Like, my reason is because I was molested. I was a victim. I was molested as a kid, and my mom didn't care about me and love me enough, and so we should fight. You know what I mean? Like, we should just fight. You know, fuck it. I don't care. Let's fight. And I think my biggest problem is I didn't have fear in the sense that, man, that big person probably kicked my ass. I was like, well, we should fight anyway. You know what I mean? And a lot of that had to do with my personal experience of, you know, even if I didn't have drugs or alcohol at the time, if you were going to inflict pain on me, at least then I could go, you know, I was a victim because you were inflicting pain on me. You know what I mean? It was never me taking responsibility for who I was or for the things that I did. And honestly, I had no clue what that meant. I mean, I was in therapy from when I was a little kid. And the thing is, you know, we could talk about what it means to be a victim and what it means to be molested or what it means to have a mother that abused you. You know what I mean? Like, we can talk about those things. But as a kid, I have no clue what that means. You'll tell me all day long that, you know, I have insecurities and that, you know, I can't form relationships and all that stuff. And I'm like, you know, well, that's cool. You want to fight too? I mean, you know what I mean? Like, It just didn't matter. You know what I mean? Like, I had no consequences in a lot of ways. I, you know, honestly, when I used to get arrested, and I got arrested a lot, and I used to say, man, I didn't really get arrested that many times, right? And, you know, honestly, if I look back, this is fucked up because I had to clean up a bunch of my stuff later on in life. I have a really big career in music, and it's not a big career. It's a career. Okay. And I had to go back because I was traveling to Canada, right? And Canadians don't want felons, right? For some reason, they don't want felons to come into their country, right? And so I'm a three-time felon. It's hard to admit I'm a fucking criminal. You know what I mean? And, not today. I'm not, but I have been, you know, and I had to go back and get all these, I had to go to the FBI and go, you know, my name's James Wellworth and I need all these files because I'm trying to clean up my life and I'm trying to do better and all this stuff. And I had to go make an amends. I had to go to court. I ran away from New Jersey, and I got arrested for drugs, and I left, and I never went back. And so after I got sober, this all ties in, by the way. After I got sober, my sponsor was like, you're going to have to go and make amends. And I was like, no. And he was like, no, you have to. And I was like, no, they're going to throw me in jail. And he was like, well, how free do you want to be? Do you want to have a good life? Do you want to not have to run anymore? Do you want to hold your head up high? Do you want to have some integrity in your life? And I was like, well, yeah, I want those things, but I don't want to go to jail. Right? It sounds reasonable. So somehow my sponsor calls up to New Jersey and I fly up there and he talks to the secretary of the judge or something. And we're talking about a 20-year-old charge, but It was a drug charge, and it wasn't going anywhere. You know what I mean? And I go up in front of the judge, and he goes, "Where you been, Mr. Wellworth?" And I was like, "Man, I've just been anywhere but New Jersey, you know?" And he was like, "I can see that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to fine you $500, and I understand that you've changed your life around, right?" And I was like, "Yeah, I have." And I was like, "That's it?" He was like, "Yep, $500. And I walked out. And they were talking about giving me 3 years of prison. And that's just the power of this program. You know what I mean? Like, that's – and that, the other thing is, that's not me. That's a power greater than myself. That you know, me left to my own devices, I will absolutely be like, nope, I'm not going, you know? So anyway, I had to go back to the FBI and go, you know, I need all these papers. And so I have a stack of criminal convictions and charges and all this stuff. And, you know, and I'm reading through it, and I was like, I don't even remember getting arrested for that. You know what I mean? And I was like, I don't even remember this. And you're supposed to write this thing out to the government, and you're supposed to write this whole thing where it says, you know, own up to your responsibilities and what you did and how you've changed it. And I was like, I don't really remember some of this stuff, you know, and honestly, I don't. So I kind of just made some of this stuff up. I was like, I guess it was probably drugs and alcohol, you know, because the majority of it was. But I mean, honestly, when I got this this like folder of all the stuff from the FBI, I was like, oh my goodness. Like, it was like, it's really truly understanding that as much as I didn't want to be a criminal, or as much as I didn't want to identify with being a criminal, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm different today, and now this is who I am. Do you understand? Like, these are the things that make up the person that I am today. I have committed a lot of crimes in my life. I don't today, and I'm grateful for that. But it's, you know, that kind of stuff. And the funny thing was, I had to pay a bunch of money to get the they call it temporary residence permit or whatever, and they basically are absolving me of my sins from, and they just want money. You know what I mean? Because honestly, it was all of this is 20 years ago. And so I send them all this stuff, and like, I do all this stuff, and again, they let me into Canada, right? And this is, you know, for my current gig. And it's kind of crazy to think that a person like me, a person that would normally run away from all that and just be like, you know what, I'm just going to ignore all that stuff and hopefully it won't catch up to me. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't ever go away, but I just hope it doesn't come, you know, knocking on my door. And to actually own up to that shit today is, you know, that's a pretty amazing thing as far as I'm concerned. For this alcoholic, that's, you know, that was learned in this room, and it was learned in rooms like this about a direct result of, you know, working a program of Alcoholics Anonymous and, you know, doing the inventory and finding a power greater than myself and actually going out and willing to be free from all the stuff that held me back before. And, whew, you know, going through that stuff, I mean, I feel like nowadays I feel like I can overcome anything. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I can walk through any of this stuff, and I can walk anybody through this program as well in that sense. Like, I could walk somebody through some of the darkest things that they're going to go through in early sobriety or in long-term sobriety. But, you know, I feel like I have a purpose today that I didn't have when I was younger. You know, I have a purpose when it comes to this program and how much I give back and what I'll do, and I'll go above and beyond the call to do that for somebody else. And, you know, I know that we've all had that experience when you're talking to somebody and you're like, I don't really believe you. You know what I mean? We've all had that experience. And when I talk to people, the majority of the time, people will understand that I'm not telling them a lie. I'm not trying to brag. I'm not trying to boast of how badass I am, because I'm not. In fact, I will play that down. In early sobriety, I was a junkie and a drunk. Do you remember? I had to be different, right? Nowadays, I'm just like, man, I'm not even that person anymore, you know? It's pretty amazing that those changes happen. So when I got out of, when I finally got, I got released at 18, they couldn't hold me anymore, you know what I mean? And I had been playing music for you know, whenever I could, because I was like, you know, all my heroes were junky musicians, you know, and I just wanted to be like them, you know. I just was a punk rock kid who just wanted to be just like Sid Vicious or Keith Richards or Johnny Thunders, you know what I mean? Like, I just wanted to be like those guys, and, you know, I wanted to live fast, die young, and leave a beautiful corpse, you know what I mean? And, you know, nowadays it just looks like I'm going to leave a beautiful corpse, so, but it's funny that, it's funny because I got out of the group homes and I went straight to jail. I was probably out maybe less than 4 months, and I went straight to jail for a felony assault. I ended up hurting a kid pretty bad. You know, unfortunately, he's passed away, so I was never able to go back and make that amends, which I definitely wanted to, and I was willing to do it. But I ended up going to jail for some time, and all through this time, I ended up running a studio. At some point, some semblance of my life being like somewhat normal, but only in normal in the sense of rock and roll normal. If that makes any sense. I picked a career that encouraged drugs and alcohol. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it was okay for me to show up drunk. You know what I mean? Like, it was okay for me to be up for a week. It was, you know, that's how I, you know, it wasn't like any straight job that I had. Like, you know, I'd go wash dishes or something like that, and they'd fire me in a week because you're not supposed to show up drunk and high. You know what I mean? Like, those are the things, like, they want you to be on time and they want you to do a good job. And, you know, it's crazy that they would ask me to do those things. So I ran a studio for a long time, and I was able to, you know, I had some sort of, I learned how to run sound. I learned how to record records. I learned how to play music. I learned how to tour. I learned how to do all these things out of the necessity of not having to get a straight job. You know what I mean? Like, I just couldn't do it. You know, I couldn't go work in a warehouse. It just was, you know, I just couldn't do it. And, in between all this, I would end up getting arrested once, you know, on a regular, you know, for drugs and alcohol. One way or the other, it was usually drugs. And I sold drugs for a long time. And that's pretty much what funded my studio, my music. You know, it funded a lot of things. And then it didn't work. Do you know what I mean? You remember that moment when it didn't work anymore? When it just fucking didn't work. And it was like, it was fun. It was awesome. It was like, I'm living this amazing life. I'm doing all the things that I ever thought I'd do. And I was so fucking unhappy that it just was miserable. And there was no amount of drugs or alcohol or sex or anything that was going to fill that was going to make me feel better. It's just none. And the problem being, as a good alcoholic, I mean, 20 years of that misery and suffering. And it didn't work anymore. And I didn't know any other way. Like, I used to go to detox literally so I could leave town. You know what I mean? Like, we'd have these little tours lined up, and I'd go to detox to get my habit so I wouldn't have to be dope sick out on the road. And I just, you know, I think about that nowadays. I'm like, wow, just, I can't even believe that. I mean, I can believe it, but you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to imagine that person anymore. So I went to multiple rehabs as well, and I just, again, I'd go to rehab and I'd be like, oh man, I'm get clean a little bit. I'd start feeling better. I'd get on methadone, or I'd get on, you know, whatever. I'd get all this stuff out of my system, and all of a sudden I'd start feeling better. And the thing is, then they'd let me out, right? And, you know, like any good drug addict, alcoholic, what are we going to do when we go out of here? Right? Now, the difference is, what are you going to do when you get out of here? You know what I mean? Like, there's got to be a change. There's got to be something different. You know what I mean? And you know, I mean, they told me, and I know you've heard this, right? I heard it right in this room, and it freaks me out. But they told me that I only had to change one thing. You know what that is? Yeah. Right? So that's no different. I'm not special. You know, right? And the thing is, it's true. I literally had to walk out of here and go, I have no idea what I'm doing. I have no idea how to be sober. And I used to go around and be like, you're sober? I'm going to come hang out with you. What are you doing? What are we doing? And I would go to like 3 meetings a day. And I literally was like 2 feet in this program, and I had no clue. I went in, And I also refused to go back to music when I first got sober. And I went and painted houses. And I painted houses, and I remember my sponsor fronted me the money to get a phone because I didn't have a cell phone. I didn't have mode of transportation. I had a bike. Somebody gave me a bike, and somebody gave me a guitar. And Chris gave me a guitar in early sobriety, and I'll never forget that because I didn't have anything. You know what I mean? I didn't have a guitar. And he was like, man, I think you're going to need this. And I was like, well, I never forgot that. You know what I mean? And, you know, over the years, I've paid it forward multiple times, and I'm not going to talk about that. But it's those are the things, the little things in life that you get to do for somebody else that you don't need to tell anybody about. And that's one of the coolest things that me as a recovering alcoholic could do. But in early sobriety, I was not ready to go back to music, and I was not ready to do anything but learn how to stay sober. And I just remember calling my one friend and telling him, I'm finally went into rehab, and him and his family, who I've known for, you know, 30 odd years, they sent me a card, and they sent me a card to here. And when I got it, I didn't know his address. You know what I mean? Like, it had been that long since I talked to him that I didn't know he lived where he lived. And it said one thing. It said, you are loved, right? And I hadn't felt loved at all. And no amount of anybody could give that to me. But at that moment, I actually felt loved. Do you know what I'm saying? And that experience was able to, you know, push me a little bit further into going, you know, well, maybe I should stay sober, you know, because there's a moment in when I was in those beds in there, and I would wake up in the morning and I'd be like, I didn't feel like shooting and putting a needle in my arm, and I didn't feel like drinking a 40 of Mickey's, where I was like, oh wow, maybe this thing does work. And then, like, you know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I was like, man, there is a liquor store right down there, right? You know what I mean? All that shit comes back. It's right across the field. I actually saw some guys when I was here go across the field at night and went to the whatever gas station was over there, get 40s and drink them in the field and come back into the rooms. And I was like, I don't want to do that. And that's the first time I really said that. You know what I mean? Like, felt it deep down inside that I was like, I don't want to do that anymore. My problem is that I can say that all you want. I can say that all day long. But unless I change something, unless I put something else in there, I'm going to go drink because that's what I do. You know what I mean? I'm going to go shoot dope because that's what I do. And luckily I met my sponsor here. He was telling his story, and we have this joke because when I met him, he looked a lot different than I did, but what he said was very similar to what I had. And I said, you know, I bet we would get along out on the streets, but I think we'd probably have a problem with the cut. You know what I mean? Sharon dope would probably fight about it or something. You know what I mean? And I realized that he was telling my story, and he was 20 years sober or something like that at the time. And I was like, come on, 20 years in a row? Like, I didn't believe people. You know what I mean? Like, people would come in and be like, you know, I got a year sober. I was like, really? Because it just didn't seem like it was true. Like, 30 days, right? You know, they say 30 days is a long time. I mean, fuck, that shit was so long. Like, it was like biting your fingernails. Like, and I remember my first year sober, and I was like going through all these things, and I remember seeing, we used to have these meetings out of Cross Park, and they used to give out these marbles. You still do that here? Yeah, they give out these marbles, right? And I remember seeing somebody get a marble for a year, and I was like, whoa, look how big it is. You know, like, it was just crazy to think like that. Cause I think, did they give us a little marbles out for each individual month, right? There you go, right? I got all those. I still do. I actually have them in a box, and yeah, it's kind of awesome. But so I met my sponsor here, and I remember there was a tree on the other side of the building over here that I did my first third step with. And now here's the thing that kind of blew my mind. He was talking about God, and I was like, no, no way. We don't have to really talk about God, do we? You know. And of course, you know, I start thinking that, you know, I'm now going to have to go to church, and I'm going to have to go, you know, I'm going to have to wear a white robe, or I'm going to have to, you know what I mean? Like, this is how things are going to change, and I'm going to get brainwashed or whatever, right? And, you know, honestly, I did get a little brainwashed because my brain needed a little washing, you know what I mean? Like, you know, all said and done. But my sponsor had laid out what it meant to be an alcoholic. I was clearly powerless, right? But unmanageable, I didn't really. I had a little issue with that. Even though I was in here and I didn't have anything but a backpack, I still had a problem with unmanageability for some reason. Like, I still thought that I could probably manage something. You know what I mean? Like, if you hadn't gave me the opportunity, I could probably manage something. But that came a little later. But willing to turn my life over to the care of God as I understood Him, we talked about that. But to get on my knees with another man and pray to a God that I didn't really understand. I mean, I've been on my knees before, if you know what I mean. And that wasn't something that I was really willing to do. But to hold another man's hand and pray to a God, and that was something so powerful for me that I didn't understand it. I don't need to understand it today. I don't need to get involved with what God looks like or what it is, or, you know, I just need to know that it works. You know what I mean? Like, I just need to know that I need to plug it in. If a light comes on, the only way that I'm going to turn that light on is if I plug it into the wall or flip the switch, right? But I have to take that action to flip those switches, because it's not magically going to come and do it itself. I don't believe that God's going to come down and spring fairy dust on my Captain Crunch in the morning and I'm going to be all spiritual. I really believe that this is something that takes action and more action and more fucking action. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't just, when you think that it lets up, that's not it. You got to keep going. You got to keep moving forward. And that's my personal experience. And I know that it works in other people because I see it. I see it in Chris. I see it in a lot of my friends. You know what I mean? I see it in Chris. I mean, I see, you know what I mean? They're both Chris. Chris saw me when I came in. I saw Chris when he came in. You know what I mean? And this is, I mean, that's part of what this program is. It shows me a different way of life. It shows me how to plug into a power greater than myself, and it shows me how I can be of service to others. And the thing is, if I'm not going to be willing to do that, what am I here for? You know what I mean? If you're not willing to do that, why are you here? I mean, truly, you got to ask yourself that question. You know what I mean? It's all up to you. It's all about choices now. You know? I'm not going to pretend like I have the power of choice. What I'm going to say is I have a choice to plug into a power greater than myself that allows me to do a lot of cool stuff, right? Left to my own devices, my unmanageability comes out and I end up doing some stupid things, and I make mistakes. And the deal is that life is going to happen regardless, right? And we're all going to make mistakes. That's part of life. The difference nowadays is that if I'm going to learn from those mistakes, or am I going to try to cover them up again with alcohol and drugs and sex and whatever else it is, you know what I mean? Records or music or, you know what I mean? Like, what am I going to do about it? You know, and that's pretty much, you know, my biggest question to a lot of the guys that I work with. What are you going to do about it? You know what I mean? Oh my God, my life is so fucked up. I can't believe that she left me. He left me. I don't know what to do. And I'm like, yeah, what are you going to do about it? I mean, there's clear cut directions in the book, right? I mean, literally, you know, it's an amazing program. And I was scared more than I've ever been scared in my life when they let me out of here. When they said I could go home, which I didn't have, when they said I could go to a group home, or another group home, which was a sober house, but it was a group home as far as I was concerned. I know all about being institutionalized. When I said I could leave here, I was like, I don't know what to do. I have no clue how to stay sober. And I called people, and the guy, I think, didn't Dutch speak out here, right? My bro Dutch, he was my roommate there. And I just remember we were very much in a prison cell again. You know what I mean? It was like 10 by 10, 12 by 12, two tables, two beds. And it was like, you could reach, touch him. You know what I mean? Like, and it was like, I just was like, this is what my life has come to. You know what I mean? And I just remember sitting out here, and I was scared and probably the happiest I had been in forever, Because the difference was that I was actually doing something in my life. I was calling my sponsor on a regular basis. I was actually working the steps. I was actually going to meetings. I was actually working with others. I was actually concerned with what other people what other people were going through instead of just my little plans and designs and my selfish self-centeredness. I was actually trying to seek out a power greater to myself, and through meditation, prayer and meditation, saying many times throughout the day, "Your will, not mine." I still say that shit. You know what I mean? It doesn't go away. It's one day at a time. It's every day. You know, sometimes I'm like, fuck, again, I have to write this inventory. You know what I mean? Like, it's that kind of stuff kind of gets me sometimes, because I feel like at almost 11 years, I shouldn't be making mistakes where I have to make inventory. But you know what? Some people don't act right. Right? Oh, it's still not about them, is it? No. Still, I mean, you know, as much as we joke about this, it's still not about them. It's about me and what my actions are. It's about what my selfish plans and designs are. It's not about why you're not acting right. It's why I'm not acting right. It's why my perspective is so skewed that you're doing something to me that I'm going to get upset about. And that's, you know, that's not realistic. That's delusional. That's what that is. Right? For real. And I mean, there's only one way to do it, is you write it out on a piece of paper and you share it with somebody else. And you resolutely turn your thoughts to somebody that you can help. You know, you trust God. I mean, an amazing experience. Amazing. I mean, going back and doing my amends, I had pages and pages of amends, and I had pages and pages of inventory. When I did my fourth step, it literally was like seven, and I'm not bragging, all right? I'm not, but I was like 17 pages long, front and back, and it was like all this stuff, and it was like, you know, I think Blind Dave says anything over five and they're bragging or something like that. I was like, but I'm not. I mean, these are the things that I've done, and I'm, you know, regardless, I had to get really to the nuts, to the nitty gritty, and I had to really own up to my shit, and I really had to understand that these are the things that I've done. You know what I mean? I've done these to people, and I need to make these right one way or another. I need to own up to it, and I need to not walk around in a life and think that these people did it to me, or that I shouldn't be able to go up and go, you know what, I'm a different person today, and I really need to make an amends to you. To be able to do that and be free of that stuff and be like, I had one girlfriend, I owed her money. And I went up and I thought she was going to be cool with me and all that, right? I was thought, oh man, I've changed my life. I'm sober. I've been, you know, 2 years sober now, and I'm going to, you know, everything's going to be different. And I'm doing all this stuff. And she was like, I don't fucking want to see you. And I was like, so hurt. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm like, but wait, I owe you money. Here's the check. Okay. I owned up to all the stuff that I did, and she listened to me, and she still has not cashed that check. And that's part of the deal. I mean, it's not me. If she cashed it today, there's money in my bank, she can get it. You know what I mean? Like, but the thing is, I needed to make that step to go and own up to that stuff. And sometimes, I mean, you know, sometimes we talk about, you know, whether it's going to hurt other people, whether I should really go up and make amends to people that I've hurt, or own up to some truths that people don't know about. You know what I mean? There's a fine line to that. And, you know, I was able to make an amends to her and not necessarily have to drag her down to my level. You know what I mean? Like, and that was a pretty powerful experience. I've made lots of amends in my lifetime. I've currently made a couple, and they were some of the most powerful, to my ex-wife, who, you know, I made some real big mistakes, and I was able to sit down at the table and really own up to it. And, you know, now we're close friends now that we have been in a lot of years, and it blows me away. And, you know, Chris was talking about my kids, and he knows my kids intimately. Like, he knows my kids. Like, they know him. You know what I mean? Like, and this is, they told me, I had cancer, right? And, I probably shouldn't be here, right? There's multiple times. I've OD'd, I fell out a 4-floor window, 45 feet, and they basically put me back together again. I've had multiple surgeries, and I had cancer, testicular cancer, and they told me I would never have kids. You know, I have one testicle, you know, and, now I have four kids. So, you know, it's kind of amazing, but You know, I mean, honestly, all I have to do is look at my kids and realize why I'm here, or why that these kids are in my life in the first place, is because, you know, I wasn't supposed to die. I just wasn't. I mean, as much as I wanted to, or as much as I lived like I was going to die, I just wasn't supposed to. And I was supposed to be in these kids' lives, and I was supposed to show up for them, and I was supposed to be Papa. You know what I mean? I was supposed to show them, you know, how to play music. I was supposed to, you know, show them how to ride a bike. I was supposed to show them how to do homework, although I'm not very good at that. I still try real hard. I was supposed to show them about art. I was supposed to show them about reading. You know, I'm supposed to show them how to be good people and have integrity and tell the truth and say you're sorry when you're sorry. You know what I mean? I'm supposed to be here to show these kids that. And it's one of the most fulfilling and satisfying things that I've ever been a part of. And, you know, some days they're pain in the ass. You know what I mean? It's just the way it goes. And I have to be really honest about that. And I'm really proud of my kids, and I'm really proud of the people, the kid that are turning. I have a set of twins that are 9. I have another daughter that's 8, and another daughter that's 2. And they're at my house now, and that's amazing to me. I hear a lot of horror stories about in sobriety or outside of sobriety, where a lot of people lose their kids and lose touch of, you know, with their families and stuff like that. And I'm here to tell you that it doesn't have to be like that, you know. And my kids have never seen me drunk. They never see me high, and that doesn't make me better. That's just the truth. You know what I mean? And I've done all the work that I can do to make sure that that doesn't ever happen. You know what I mean? I some days I feel like, you know, what am I doing? How am I? I'm spinning my wheels. And then I go pick up my kids from school, and I go down and sit and I do homework with them. And I'm like, oh, right. That's right. Okay. That's what I'm doing, right? You know, I'm in constant contact with my sponsor. I talk to him all the time. I mean, a couple times a week. And he knows everything. He knows where all the bodies are buried. You know what I mean? He knows all the stuff, and I never thought anybody would ever know that. And he said that if I wanted to get really honest about things, and if I really wanted to be clear and become the person that I knew that I could be, I had to put it all out there. The dirty, darkest secrets, they're all out there. I no longer have to hide from that stuff. The stuff that used to get me to go get high, on top of getting high, I don't have to do that anymore, because it's all out in the open. I mean, I'm not freely to share a lot of things with people outside of these rooms, but inside of these rooms, all that stuff is valuable. It never had value before. It was always something that brought me down. It was always something that I was ashamed of, I was guilty of, I was scared of. I no longer have to be scared of the person that I am today. You know what I mean? I've worked really hard. I'm back in the music business. I tour all over the world. I have a great career, I tell this story sometimes in front friends of mine, and you know, if you had told me 25 years ago that I'd be working with one of the bands that I work with now, and I think about this stuff, right? And because we talk about dream, like living the dream, right? I'm living the dream. Well, honestly, I am. You know what I mean? Like, and if you had told me 25 years ago that I would be working with this band and that I actually am, you know, I pay my rent and I take care of my kids as a direct result of music, and it blows my mind, right? And I feel like sometimes I'm bragging. I'm not trying to, but it's just like sometimes my life is so fucking good. It blows my mind. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, dude, I'm doing all these things. And, you know, and the things that matter, honestly, if you took the gig away, you know what I mean? If you took the girl away, if you took, you know, whatever else, all the ego shit, the money, all the house, all that stuff, do you think I'd stay sober today? Yeah, I think I would. You know, there's a reason being that, because I'm 2 feet in this program. And the first thing, when I open my eyes, I say, you know, good morning, and I'm talking to a power greater than myself, and I pray and meditate, and I go throughout the day and I live this program. I don't just pretend to live this program, just give it lip service. This is really how I live. And the thing is, all the other stuff that comes with that, that's awesome. I'm really happy for all that shit. I'm glad I got, you know, I'm able to pay my rent. I'm glad that I'm able to take care of my kids. I'm glad I got a really cool job. But none of that matters when it comes to filling that God-sized hole that's inside of here. If I'm not doing the work, I get really unhappy. And then I start, you know, getting a case of the fuck it's. Well, fuck it. They don't care. You don't care. Fuck you. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to live like that today. I don't. You know, I want to have a good life. And that doesn't have to be. The career doesn't make who I am. Even a dad doesn't make who I am. This program makes up who I am. You know what I mean? I literally found God in this room. You know, I found a way of life in this room. I found a way of life outside of this room. And again, it was just super scary, but there was way that was the way it went. And I'm super grateful that Chris would even, you know, invite me up here. It's every time that I tell my story, I become really, really, you know, even more grateful than usual, because anybody that would want to hear what I have to say, you know what I mean? Like, I'm a low bottom drunkie. I'm a low bottom drunk. You know what I mean? And I feel like some days I don't have anything to share, right? But, you know, this is why I'm here. This is why I'm plugged in. This is what this program has given me, is that I get to stand up here and talk to you guys, you know? So I'm really grateful, and thanks for having me.